Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome. Tears carry creative power. In mythos, the giving of tears causes immense creation and heartfelt reunion. In herbal folklore, tears are used as a binder to secure elements, unite ideas, and join souls. In fairy tales, when tears are thrown, they frighten away robbers or cause rivers to flood. When sprinkled, they call the spirits. When poured onto the body, they heal lacerations and restore sight. When touched, they cause conception. When one has ventured this far into relationship with the life, death, life, nature, the tear that is cried is the tear of passion and compassion mixed together for oneself and for the other. It is the hardest tear to cry, and especially for men and certain kinds of street tough women. This tear of passion and compassion is most often wept after the accidental finding of treasure, after the fearful chase, after the untangling, for it is the combination of these that causes the exhaustion. Wow. The disassembly of defenses, the facing of oneself, the stripping down to the bones, the desire for both knowledge and release. These cause a soul to peer into what the soul truly was, and to weep for loss and love of both. And so yet again, we are back with Women Who Run With the Wolves as the opener for this episode by Larissa Pinkola Estes, PhD. So welcome back to Come to the Brink. I am Zoe Flowers, and thank you for being here, for following, for sharing, and for walking this path with me. I want to just say all of the messages that I've been getting, all of the texts I've been getting, all of the DMs has really been surprising and so good and so meaningful. And I am like so happy, and it's part of the reason why the show went from being bi-weekly to weekly, because I want to keep this content coming for you all, and also because I just have so many great guests that I just can't like wait every other week to introduce to you. So yeah, I just wanted to start off the show by saying that. And you know, this show is really a love letter for those of us navigating the in-between, that space between breakdown and breakthrough, between grief and grace. And today's conversation is exactly that. A doorway into what happens when the body starts to speak and we're finally ready to listen. And it just like links me back to that reading that I just read. I just feel like it's going to weave so beautifully into that conversation, because we're talking about going into the unseen, we're talking about the unspoken, and we're talking about the deeply spiritual. And so the person I'm talking to about that today is Shanda Domingo, a trained dancer, choreography, medium, and creator of Healing Movement, a somatic, ancestral, and spiritual healing modality born from her own journey through loss, pregnancy, and awakening. One of the things that Shanda said in her bio was that she thought she knew her body
And she should, right? She trained it, she taught it, and she used it to build a career in movement and fitness. But she says when she became pregnant, something shifted. And so she was guided by a family friend and medium. And that helped her to begin studying chakra-based and ancestral healing. And so she now offers this work through organizations like the Metropolitan Human Services District, New Orleans Opera, the Essence Festival Wellness House. And she's also a medium. So that's how I came to know her. I went to her a couple of weeks ago. I think February. So, and it was just such a powerful reading, and it gave me such a sense of peace about my mother's passing. So I definitely wanted to have her on the show to talk about that. You know, being a medium means she communicates directly with the ancestors. I mean, we started our session and my ancestors was like lined up at the door waiting to come through. So we're going to dive into that. I feel like that's a conversation that we don't talk about enough is mediumship. And I'm going to ask her how it works for her and how grief lives in the body, like what she's seen about that and how we reclaim ourselves when we listen to what's been waiting in the silence all along. So, welcome to the show. I'm so honored.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. So I wanted to start with this conversation about your awakening. And
yeah,
because you led into your bio really with like how pregnancy sort of brought things to the surface. So what were you wrestling with in that season?
Okay. So when I was pregnant, basically the time that I was pregnant was right before COVID. And so I'm pregnant. I'm just realizing that it's twins, being confirmed that it's two boys. And so I'm like, yo, I'm about to bring two African-American males into America. What is life right now? And because I'm like, okay, both of my parents are deceased. And so I find myself struggling with grief of I don't get to have mama, when I was little, did you, you know, or daddy, when I was growing up, or just to have the help. Because one thing about it is I know, right, that if my parents were here physically, A, they would be in the same city as me, right? And so I know that if they were here, there would be a certain level of support that I now officially felt the void of. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I had just got married maybe 2 years before then. Mm-hmm. And so I was just kind of coming on the other side of not having them at my wedding, you know, and really grappling with not feeling resentful towards my husband because both of his parents were still living, you know, but also being supported by, I mean, the entire village that raised me, you know, who were like, we are showing up for you because they knew that my parents weren't there, but it didn't take away that they weren't there, you know. And so I'm coming on the other side of that. Now I'm pregnant with these boys and my body is changing and shifting. And then I have them and I go, what is life? I'm in charge of these two living beings. COVID happens and then George Floyd happens. And I go, I have two black boys that I now have to keep on. How do I explain this? How does this work? You know, all of these things. And then had a lot of things actually shift in my marriage and in my personal life that really just brought me to my knees. And I had a family friend who I knew was a medium. I would go to see her like once every, you know, 6 or 7 months. That would be my way to check in with my parents. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, I just went in front of her and was like, what are we doing? Like, what is happening? And she was like, bring a picture of your parents to my house. I'm gonna put it on my altar for you. And I was like, oh, you know, I was like, okay, cool. And she was like, bring your journal and you're just going to sit in front of their picture and just talk to them and journal, talk. And I wasn't close to it. It was like, I just did it. I didn't like have any hesitations. I didn't think about what I was doing. I didn't think about any formality. I needed them. And that was what I knew I was clear on. And for the first time, I sat in front of their picture, and it was literally like I could hear them fussing at me. Like, you know your parent voice. So it was like, I knew it wasn't my ego. I knew it wasn't me trying to psych myself out.
Yes.
I was like, oh, shit, Nick. Like, they are really talking to me.
Yeah.
And I was just journaling. And I was just journaling and journaling. And that turned it into, there's something deeper and bigger about this life. Because the medium that I went to, she was like, you don't need me to do this. And she was like, it's time that you take your healing into your own hands. You have to go deeper, and I'm not going to let you be codependent on me. And I'm always so grateful to her for that, because it gave me such a beautiful foundation to my awakening, to where I trust the information that lands on my path, because I know it's whatever I'm supposed to have or whatever I'm supposed to need. And from having her as that foundational teacher, I don't get too attached or look to other people for my answers. I trust them as a guide and as a teacher and nothing more, nothing less. But me falling to my knees, where I was like, what am I supposed to do with this? What am I supposed to do with these children? What am I supposed to do with this man? What am I supposed to do with this house and this job? Like, what is it? And I was took my first spiritual bath. And that was the first time I could feel my ancestors, my mother, my grandmother. I could hear them and I could feel them without trying. And I just cried and cried and cried. And I slept like a baby. And the next morning I woke up and was like, I knew there was something starting new in me.
So when you, yeah, that resonates, that sort of first initiation, which we'll get to. But taking it back to the pregnancy and your body.
Yes.
What did you learn about your body and your, right? Like, what did you learn about that? What did pregnancy teach you?
It was very humbling.
Oh.
Because as a, you know, my ego, right? I'm like, I'm a professional dancer. I choreograph. I'm a fitness trainer. I'm the person that's on the gym, on the Stairmaster in the gym for like an hour. And you're like, she's still on there. What is she doing? That was me, you know, rehearsals 4 or 5 hours, dancing in heels, like that was my life. And so now I get pregnant and my body was like, that's cute. I'm going to let you do that for the first couple months. And I still worked out, very blessed, but my boys, when I would do too much, they would whip my butt. Like, I could feel them being like, girl, sit down.
Like, literally moving inside your
like
body.
Literally moving like you doing too much. It would cause me just enough pain to have to sit down.
Wow.
And so one of the things I learned is that I didn't realize how much of survival mode that my body was in and what it got used to. And so my pregnancy introduced me to the first experience of giving myself the permission to rest, which is something I've always been like, 5 a.m., get up, grind, grind, grind. Like, my pregnancy was like, or nah. Like, and I couldn't risk something happening to them because I wanted to move my body. And so my body always gave me these really subtle, loving messages of sit your butt down. You're doing too much. And before, you know, when you don't have a living being in your body, you're like, let me just put a little ankle wrap on this, move through it. You know, my body always used to tell me when I was tired, but I always forced it to push through. And this time around pregnancy, my body was like, you're not going to do that this time. And for the first time, I felt like I needed to let my body be the leader and not like my mind and my ego. So even though I could have taught kettlebells my entire pregnancy, I think I watched I wound up like binging on like Game of Thrones and embracing what nesting was. And my body was so grateful for that. The amount of rest. I didn't realize how tired I was.
Yeah.
The amount of rest.
Yeah.
The entire thing. And then I remember I had a C-section and I remember, you know, delivering and I'm trying to do squats on the sofa. Yeah. And my body's like, what are you? Sit down. Like, I laughed too hard. Yeah. Everything hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was cleared to work out, I tried to go back into just, all right, let me go back into my bodybuilding workout formats. Yep. And my body was like, absolutely not. You will not do this to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I guess we got to try something new. And that's how I started yoga.
Got it. Yeah, we definitely can be delusional when we're used to. So I had a myomectomy in 2010. For folks that don't know, that's like a removal of fibroids where it's like a very serious surgery. You have to sign a waiver, like you could die, you know. In some cases, I guess y'all need a trigger warning. But it's a pretty serious surgery, and there's lots of things that can take you off of the planet. And so I had mine, right? And I was living in Tallahassee at the time. And there was a Fela Kuti concert in Atlanta, like 2 weeks after my surgery. So my dear sweet mother, of course, she came from Connecticut to Florida to be with me through the surgery. And I wanted to heal in Atlanta at my cousin Michelle's house because I wanted to heal in Atlanta. I didn't want to heal in Tallahassee. Like, what? Like, what? I'm finna do in Tallahassee? Like, no, I want to go to the Fela Kuti concert. So, like, you know, you go to the follow up with your physician. And I was like, well, I'm going to Atlanta on Friday. And he was like, you still have stitches. You just had surgery like 7 days ago. You're planning to go in the car. It's like a 6-hour drive. And I was like, I'll be fine. I have a Ford Explorer. I can just lean back while my mom drives. And he was like, I just need you to know that this is absolutely against doctor's wishes. Like, there's no way that I can okay this. And I was like, okay. So we went. It took like 8 hours because at the time my mother had to be like 60 something, bless her heart, driving my Ford Explorer. Of course you feel every bump because it's that mm-hmm. split at the time where it's split right on the, I guess, the pubic bone. So
mm-hmm.
you feel laughing, going to the back, like all of that was like horrific.
Yes.
So I get to my cousin's house and I'm like, you know, we had to take my mother to the airport for her to go back to Connecticut. I'm wheeling her in the wheelchair through at Hartsfield. By the time I get back in the car, okay, trigger warning, folks, I'm spotting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to be on the couch. So I get back home and I'm putting my feet up on the couch. And I said to my cousin, I guess I can't go to the Fela Kuti. Who has major surgery and thinks that they can go to a Fela Kuti? But my body had
because we're always told
to push through.
Yeah. Yes.
And my friend Lorraine, she bounced back. She had the surgery. She was like, she said she was fine. But it took a full year for me to heal from that surgery. Like a full, but my body had never betrayed me before. I was like, I'll be fine. I'm going to the Fela Kuti. We'd be delusional.
We really do. I did the same thing. I was like, I had literally had two colleagues of mine who once before had just had twins and they was back in the gym. So I was like,
wait.
Be right there.
Right.
My body was like, you're so precious.
Like, sweetie. Sweet
to know.
Yeah, that's what I did. So then I just sat for like 3 months.
But that's also when I learned how much the body holds energetically and spiritually. Because I'm just thinking that my body is holding, you know, this pregnancy. And I'm like, they are my body now. Like, what could possibly be the issue? And it's about understanding that even that is a movement of energy.
Yeah.
And that being birth, right, it brought up so much past life stuff for me.
Really?
Like them just being born. Yeah, like it was a thing. Like it brought up so much to being in the room, finding out that like I had a similar situation in a past life that was really traumatic. And in this life, I couldn't breathe. I kept telling the people I couldn't breathe. I was getting paranoid. My poor husband had to come in there rapping to like calm me down.
Wait,
what he had to rap like
what was he
the baby had just came out. What is this song? Back in the middle of gone. So that it he came in. I was like, he came in. I said, I don't want to do this no more. He said, well, babe, you already got the injection. You're on the table. So I think this is happening. I was like, no, I changed my mind. And I was like, I can't do it. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And then he just looked at me. He went, run in the middle. So I was like, slug, yeah. I just like calmed down.
That will be the title of the show. You got to
know. Yeah, but like,
No.
Yes. And then I remember afterwards, and I'm very grateful because my teacher had wound up coming to the hospital. She had brought my parents' picture.
Oh, wow.
Right, which is, I think she just felt led to come, you know? So I was really grateful for her energy there. And after that, after having them, so much stuff started coming up. My past relationships. So my body could not take those intense, heavy workouts anymore. So I wasn't even ready to dance again yet. Because I was a little resentful. I was like, well, I don't look like how I used to look. I just got my abs back. What is, you know, like. And so I started yoga. And then started learning the foundation of yoga, the principles of yoga. And began going, I need just a little bit more. But I started setting intentions before doing it. I need to move this sacral stagnancy out. How can I do that? And so if I was doing light weights or bar or Pilates, I really went intentionally and into this intentional meditation as I move my body. And then I would be shown memories or images or words as I was going through these workouts. And I mean, my body would start bleeding. I would start having to like pause and I would just break down crying. So I was like, oh my God, my body has been holding on to all of this, and I've been underestimating the whole time. And then I was like, I have to show my like this. I have to show my clients this. Like, how? What else are we holding on to? And I had a client. I was like, listen, I think I have this new way of training y'all. Are you open to it? And she was like, yeah, let's go. And I was like, I'm gonna try to, I started hearing voices at the time. And I was like, I think I hear a man's voice. This is what he's saying. And then I would start getting shown the exercises that they needed. And we were in the middle of a workout and her cycle came down. We were working on sacral stuff. And she was like, oh my God, my cycle just came down. And I was like, oh, do you need to go to the bathroom? She was like, no, you don't understand. I'm not supposed to have one. And then we both just like looked at each other. And she was like, whatever you're doing, it works. And okay. I was like, okay, here we go.
We're going to have to back up because
I know I spent the block. So
No. Only because, and I know you'll manifest this with me, because this is going to be heard by millions of people at some point.
Yes.
This will be heard by millions of people. And the sacral, the this, the that, that's our world.
Right, I'm sorry. Yeah.
For the people who might not know what that means, What you talking about?
Yeah, my fault, y'all.
What's this sacral stuff?
Our sacral chakra is whatever you identify with, it is your womb space. It is your pelvic floor region. And this is the part of your body that houses memories and experiences, conversations, whether it's from this life or previous ones, however you want to roll with it. But it's the same energy around our emotional stability, our joy, our zest for life, our well-being, our sensuality, our creative expression. It is, you might even hear some people refer to it as a literal portal.
Yes.
It is that for us. So when you're someone who may be giving birth, or you're someone who may be experiencing cysts or fibroids, or just irregular menstruation, or just pelvic floor pain, there's something emotionally and mentally that the body is now physically manifesting, that is accumulated over time, and is calling for you to give it some attention and to move the body around and to do some work around that.
Mm-hmm. And the sacral is has to do with the chakra system, for those of you that may not know. And you don't have to have a womb to it's our reproductive region. And I did have, I told you I had fibroids, and I did like a year of sacral chakra work to try to heal them naturally. Mm-hmm. That's I wound up having to have the myomectomy, but yeah, mm-hmm. year of that sacral work. But something you said is so fascinating mm-hmm. to me, like, and you made me think about how people always talk about childbirth is like that portal. We literally talk about being on the brink. You're on the brink of death and life.
Yeah.
And then it's so interesting that we read from Women Who Run With the Wolves about life, death, and
yeah.
And so I just wonder if it's like you were on that brink of the crossover time, meet me at the crossroads. Mm-hmm. And then you brought back all of these messages. It's like you tapped into the underworld in a different way, and you... an overworld, I guess, and you brought all mm-hmm. gifts back with you. What do you think about that?
I can see that, because I always say that my boys are the catalyst of my healing journey. I think when I was pregnant, yes, I was getting readings, and I was doing like very, very small meditations, but only when I was meeting with, a medium who then became my teacher. Mm-hmm. But once I had them, that's when it was like all balls to the wall. Wow. That's when the spiritual baths kicked in, the holistic lifestyle of eating, of thinking, working with herbs, healing with crystals, sun healing, ancestral healing. That's when, after I had them, that's when it was like, okay, it's time to go to work. Because I was at that place where I was starting to learn and see a lot about myself, things that needed a lot of work, and a lot of gaps. And I started understanding how that's passed down, especially through the DNA, especially by the mother. And so I felt highly responsible for the energy that I was now responsible for passing down to them, even though they weren't in my womb anymore. I started learning and researching and reading how my mood affects how they move. The way, the feng shui of the home, how all of these things will impact what they, how they move. And I was just like, I need to heal. I was just like, I want to heal all my ish. Yes. And as I went down that journey, that's when the rabbit hole happened.
Yeah.
I went down that journey, and I would wind up encountering a spirit or an ancestor who was like, yeah, but you act like this in this life because it happened in this life, and this is why. So let's go heal all of that.
Yeah.
So it really allowed for me to go deeper. Even the way I wound up doing readings on my boys, because I wanted to see what our lives were together.
Yes.
And why did we choose to come back together as mother and son? These specific roles and these specific bodies with these specific energies. And I was just like, all of that is going to help me help them.
Yeah. And the twins, I mean, just the magic of twins and the whole African sort of mythology, cosmology, twins and all of that magical goodness.
Yeah. Which I was not ready for, because my husband and I are both only children. And the plan was like, one kid, we know what to do with one kid because we're both only children.
Mm.
And I was laughing. I was like, yeah, spirit said, that's cute. Here, go too.
Yeah, no, I like the twin. I mean, and so we're in the same place now, right? Like, both of our
parents
passed. We're both only children. Like, I would not have minded a sibling to go through this shit with.
No, seriously. Well, I was very fortunate because my god sister lived five houses down. And so I got to be her annoying little sister, which I definitely was.
Yeah.
Like, admired the ground that she walked on. And she was like, this is cute, but also go home.
Yeah. Like my god sister, too. Her episode drops next week, actually.
Yep. And we had a family friend who lived across the street who was also older than me. So it was kind of like, we had a little nice little cul-de-sac of playmates. So I feel like I got the best of both worlds where I got to, like, be in community with other kids, but also I ain't had to share my toys if I ain't feel like it.
Period. So. My toys.
Good thing. Thank you.
Y'all need to go home so I can play with my toys.
I'm tired of sharing now. Everybody go home. Thank you.
I love it. So, and the other thing you said that really sparked something is this this attachment to our parents. And I guess the way that children, and I don't know, other folks who are listening, please message me and let me know if this is something that you've experienced. But I'm wondering, did you energetically, were you in tune to your parents' emotions? Like, do you remember, like...
I don't know if it was intentional. But I do remember observing them. I do remember having moments where I would look at my mom and I would just go, what's wrong? Yeah. And she'd be like, nothing. Mm-hmm. But it was like her lips would be pursed together. She'd be looking super like focused. And I just kind of like look over. And usually, now that you say it, when I think about it, it was always when she was driving.
Oh.
And I would look over at her and I'd be like, you all right? What's wrong? And she'd be like, what? Nothing. And I'd be like, oh, all right. And I just remember kind of always noticing that about her. And with my dad, I think my dad was more of, I knew, in retrospect, he had really high standards of perfection. And so I feel like with my dad, it was more of a, don't disappoint him.
Okay.
Like, very like, you are his perfect little princess. Do everything you need to do to stay perfect little princess, or like tomboy princess. And so I was always kind of moving in a way that I tried to just like, I just wanted them to be happy and proud. So I was always trying to see if they were feeling that. And then if they weren't, I was always trying to figure out what did I need to do to get that, to pull that kind of love out of them.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
It resonates. Yeah. And so when you think about your work and you think about our different experiences with parents or people being parents, this grief conversation, what do you see in the bodies of Black women in particular that you work with? How do you see things showing up?
Our heart and our sacral. And when I say chakras, y'all, like chakras are like our energy centers throughout our entire body. And each energy center, each chakra, it's like a wheel of energy. And each wheel of energy stores, again, like those memories, experiences that we experience. And so it manifests as our behaviors, our thinking, our ways of being in the earth. And so with a lot of women of color, our sacral chakras, we're always trying to justify pleasure for us, we're always healing from some type of either overuse, whether it's sexual abuse, whether it's trigger warning, whether it's abortion, or whether it's birth, miscarriages, whatever that looks like. Every woman of color I work with, there's some type of trauma that is stored in the sacral chakra, in that womb space, that we've almost just kind of like sucked up and kept it pushing. Mm-hmm. But when we get into a session and now they're in this space where they're given the permission to release, to not have to keep a smile on their face, to not be the strong one or be the resilient one, so much comes out. And it, I mean, so much is released. And then it usually winds up being connected to their heart space, which I look at a lot of us, if we don't have like that upper body strength, mm-hmm. or they come in with that upper back pain, mm-hmm. everything's tight, they have trouble turning. There's a lot of self-forgiveness that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of resentment that needs to be let go. I see a lot of that in our bodies, in the solar chakra, which is our stomach, right? Our gut, that kind of first brain, it sits right in between mm-hmm. the sacral and the heart. So then, you know, we don't think we're beautiful. We don't think we're worthy. We don't think we're valuable because we've made these choices and done these things. And now we're in this like cyclical mindset of like self-hatred, self-disgust, self-loathing. And so usually in women of color, it's been a part of my journey as well, it's this cycle that we put ourselves through, and it's like this energy that just constantly flows between those spaces.
100%. And folks, take a sip, stay hydrated. I'm drinking water with lime. So take a sip. Yes, absolutely. And so when I think about the chakras, I like to think about them as rites, the rites of each chakra. And so starting at the root, like just below, like our spine, whatever, or below, that's our right to be on the planet. Right. And so that's our right to be here. And for me, I look at a lot of this sort of chakra, quote unquote, damage happens in utero, like, and of course, epigenetically, like whatever was going on while you were cooking in the womb. And if if there's strife happening between the mother and the father, that's all that's going down into that womb space. So then the child comes in with, boom, I don't even know if I have a right to be here. Right. And then moves up to that sacral, which is like the right to feel joy and pleasure and creativity. Mm-hmm. And then, right? Then up into that solar plexus, the right to have your will put out in the world. And then going up to your heart, the right to love, going up to your throat, the right to speak your truth, your third eye, the right to use your intuition. And then the crown, the right to give and receive messages. So then you think that if any one of those things is off, so if I don't feel like I have a right to be on the planet, that's going to affect my right to pleasure. That's going to affect my right to, you know, put my will out into the world. So I might procrastinate. Then I feel like I don't have the right to love and be loved. And if I can't be loved, then I can't speak my truth. So now I'm a liar. And if I'm a liar, then my intuition is blocked. I can't see shit. And then I can't see shit, right? From the ground, right? And so it's just like, it's that snake energy that goes up and down.
So
I think it's super, super interesting that you see this, the sacral and the heart.
Yeah.
Because those were definitely issues that I had to work on.
Mm-hmm. For sure. When I always think back to my mom's side, not even just the women, but like my mom's side, everyone's passed because of some type of heart issue or heart disease. Some in some shape or form. And I had my uncle, which was my uncle was my mom's brother. He's 84. I get a call. They rushed him to the emergency room. No one knows what happened. No one knows what's wrong. I go, where did they send him? He got sent to the exact same emergency room that my mom was sent, in the exact same way. He went to the doctor for a checkup. They couldn't find his heartbeat. They sent him to the ER. That's literally what happened with my mom. Went to the doctor for a checkup, couldn't find a heartbeat, sent him to the ER. And so I'm literally like in tears because I feel like I'm reliving a nightmare, right? And looking for him and sitting there meditating, and I go in, they got him all plugged up. They have to do an ultrasound on his foot because they can't find his heartbeat. Meanwhile, this man is sitting here joking, laughing, like nothing's wrong.
What?
I've never seen anything like it in my life. And so this nurse comes in and she has this thing on the bottom of her thing that says healing hands on it. And I'm like, okay. I was like, and I just kept thinking, what is it with this side of my family with these heart issues? And I had our friend that we have in common, Dr. Stephanie Byrne. She was like, "You're a healer this time. You can help this time." And I was like, "You know what? Bet." So I go home. I light a green candle because the heart chakra is represented by the color green. Right. I call in all the ancestors. I was like, "Everybody, get up in here!" And I was like, "I don't know what this heart issue is, but we about to heal this for everybody. We not going through this no more." Because I was crying and I was so triggered by, I was like, I was reliving the same hallways, mm-hmm. the same rooms. I'm having to have the same conversations, and I was just like. And I was 36, and I think I was like 25, 26. So it's like 10 years later. I'm like, we're not doing this.
Right.
No. So I get to praying. I called in the ancestors. And I could see everybody's heart just like lighting up when I lit the candle.
Mm.
My uncle's wife called me. My aunt called me maybe 2 seconds after I lit the candle. And she was like, "He just went in surgery. I'll call you when it's over." The candle starts doing what the candle does. And
what does the candle do for people who don't know?
The candle started flickering, which lets me know that everything is good, that work is happening, that the ancestors are moving, and that we healing Ishmael this time.
Yes.
Which made me very happy. He came out of it. He was fine. They didn't even have to open up his chest to, like, put a pacemaker in, like, It was healing for like all of us. Mm-hmm. It was healing for me because I'm like also mentally like, okay, I might lose him. This is like the same thing. Yeah. And I was also like, but I don't want to. Like, I don't know. Not like this. I was like, not with another heart thing. Like, not the same way. And he was like, "I'm scared." He was like, "The last time something like this happened, I lost your mama." So he was scared that he wasn't going to make it. And I just remember feeling so empowered. Like, no. We got options. And that's why I was content with no matter which way it led. But I just felt so empowered to know that I could do something. Mm-hmm. That, you know, pray, help, something. But it brought up a lot of grief for me that I didn't even realize wasn't still processed. Like, to have to walk those hallways, park in that same parking garage, make that same walk, and have to do it for a week, just like I had to do with my mom. It was unnerving.
Mm.
But I think it was healing because it helped me remember how strong I was back then, and to be able to apply this healing modality to it. Really eased the pain this time around. Mm. And definitely brought me some peace with no matter what the outcome was. I was like, I was there, I did it, and I just don't want us to have whatever this wound is that's taking us out, you know, because that's kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah.
So I got to see it from a different point of view as well.
Yeah.
I feel like I went on a tangent, but
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Shout out to Shout out to Burns for that knowledge. And so when you think about sort of this heart thing and this heaviness thing and the different places that we carry grief in the body, I think that one of the things, just from watching people, from my own experiences, although I don't have it this much, but when you see people balancing their own needs with the mm-hmm. needs of people that they care for,
mm-hmm.
the heaviness of that.
What's
the sort of hardest part that you've either experienced or that you've seen in your work or just in life?
I think from a lot of, because I my clients are people who take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my clients are nurses, they're caretakers. They work in very demanding, feel like they're social workers. They're therapists, so they're people who are constantly holding space for others, like day in and day out.
Okay.
I had a client before who's like her mom, her grandmother, they all were, you know, sick or being rushed to hospice, and she's a therapist. You know, it was a lot of space she was holding. And so what I see is a lot of people just almost wanting to turn off their needs so that they can just get through whatever needs to be done type of thing. Yeah. And so which I get. I totally get it.
Oh, yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
Totally get it.
Yeah.
What I find is that you sometimes aren't in that sound mind when you don't give yourself what you need. And no one's saying you got to go out and party when you're trying to, you know, be a caretaker, but it is about, do you need a bath? Like, did you brush your teeth this morning? Because when I say you put all your needs to this, all your basic self-care goes out of the window. Because sometimes you're too exhausted to even brush your teeth because that's how much space you hold in, you know? And so it really is about balancing and understanding that your teeth still matter when you're caring for others. Your hair still matters when you care for others. And when you can give yourself even just that 5 minutes of care, that you are actually showing up stronger. You're actually showing up with more of the capacity to hold what you're sitting in. And so I find that I have to really, in sessions with clients, remind them this session, moving your body, is still important. Mm. When you're moving your body and you're meditating, even if you just do that, you give yourself that 1 hour, one time a week, mm-hmm. you have something to hold on to mm-hmm. while you continue to move space and hold space for other people.
Yeah, you're making me remember the day that I just decided I'm going to have to dissociate to get through this thing with my mom. I mean, decision. And I was like,
it'd be a conscious decision effort. Yeah. I got to get through this. Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. I think for me, I was with my mom. My dad, I was much younger. I was 15 okay. when my dad passed. And so my dad was a bit of a different situation. I was 15. Him and my mom didn't tell me nothing. So I didn't even know he had cancer. Okay. So I just knew he was sick. And I don't think, I think my neurodivergency just didn't let me kind of slow down enough to actually observe. I was such a busy kid, cheerleading practice, dance practice, competitive gymnastics, like all the things. And so I think I knew he was sick, but he was in a flow. He'd be sick, then he'd be home. So it was like, that's what I chalked it up to.
Yeah.
You know? So when he passed, it caught me off guard, but I woke up and went and marched a parade because I didn't want to be at home.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I'm going to go march a parade. I didn't think to stay with my mom or, you know, stay home and hold space for her or whatever. I went and marched a parade. I knew I didn't have to be home. So I think that's when what I didn't realize is my disassociation really, it kicked in. And so with my mom, I couldn't really do that. I was 24, my only child, mm-hmm. and I was dealing with having to look at her in the face, and she was like, I'm ready to go. And I was like, I'm sorry. What? I'm living in California. I'm not married yet. I ain't got no. I'm like, girl, we still got things to do. You can't be ready to go, sis. And she was like, no, I'm ready to go. I'm tired. And so having to still, then they're asking me questions. Do you have this? Do you have your fit? And I'm just like, when 24 trying to be in somebody's music video? I did not come down to process all of this. And so, but I remember when I did go there, though, my friend at the time, she said, how are you feeling? But my intuition was always a thing for those moments. And I said, I think I need to buy a one-way ticket.
Mm.
And she just stared at me. I said, my mama didn't remember my birthday. I'm going to buy a one-way ticket.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been home ever since. But I remember getting here going, I went in business mode.
Yes.
Where's the paperwork? This is what she said this is. Da-da. Only thing I did for I walked around with ankle weights on.
Because
I was super hard fitness fanatic. So to me, that was like my justification. I just walked around a hospital everywhere with ankle weights on. That was my thing. But I didn't eat. If the hospital didn't put me out, I was sleeping there.
Oh yeah.
Like mm-hmm. She had to put me out. Like I refused to mm-hmm. leave her because for me it was just me and her.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, you can't go, B. Like, it's me and you till the roof fall off. Like, my dad died right before Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, like we locked in now, you know. So what I find is that we do, like, it's a survival, especially if you have that high functioning hyper independence when it kicks in. But I don't think we realize what it does to us once we get on the other side of it.
Oh, yeah.
Once we get through it. Because then it just, I think about baby's kids, when I wanna.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. It's like, when I went to the hairdresser, you know, my mom died in July. The funeral was like, I don't know, first week of August. I had it on my father's birthday because I wanted to have her funeral on his birthday to sort of memorialize them at the same time. So her funeral was in August. And then I think it was September when I went to the hairdresser, or maybe it was October, or maybe it was November. I don't fucking remember. But what I do know is that my hairdresser was like, oh, your hair has shed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, the back of your, like the nape of your neck, hair is gone. And I was like, what? And I don't know how many pounds I've gained, maybe 15 pounds then. The state of my feet, you could strike a match. My feet were, you know, so ashy, and like, because it's just like, I just didn't think about those things until, you know, being on the other side.
Absolutely. For me, I turned into, my hyper-focus became, I think, borderline obsessive, for sure. Because the last thing me and my mom talked about, I was like, oh, mom, I think I want to try bodybuilding. And she was like, go for it. And I just remember her just being like, and I said, why you say it like that? She was like, Shonda, whatever you put your mind to, like, you do it. So if that's where her life finds, it was like, I was like, she was finally surrendering to, like, I'm just going to go with.
Just with whatever she wants. So
she was like, I've accepted that you are not going to be a corporate woman in a 2-piece suit. It was like, she finally had, like, that was a part of her dream. Like, even she was like, you can dance, but also, can you go get the corporate job too? Like, I'm going to take you to New York and Company. I'll buy the suit myself.
Not New York and Company. Up into New York and Company. With the business casual girly.
I know. I went to business school. I remember being in grad school, living in California. My mother was in New Orleans. I called my mother and said, I need a suit. This woman got on a plane and flew to California because she was not about to miss the opportunity.
Stop it.
To buy me.
Stop it.
A business casual dress.
Period. We're going to learn.
Like, I am not. I've been trying to get you in a dress your whole life. I am not about to miss this moment.
Oh my God. Take a sip, folks. Listen, New York and Company. And then when Gabrielle Union came out with her
dance. Look how long she was like, let's go.
Period.
She made this for us. Let's go. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, I just remember her being like, she just like, go for it. So after she passed, I just remember being like, I have to be a bodybuilder. That's the last thing I told her I would do. Like, I had this really, I went into a really intense, like, it was like a wellness hermit almost. I didn't want to talk to nobody. I barely wanted to talk to people around holidays because I didn't want to feel like an orphan. And I just, all I did was work out. I worked out, took supplements, I slept, I ate, and then woke up and worked out. I did that for like a year and a half.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But I pushed so many people away because I didn't want to feel.
Okay.
So for me and my body, it's always been there for me. That's kind of how I look at it. Mm-hmm. It's helped me grieve in, I think, you know, some unconventional ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I, even bodybuilding, it was fitness, but I had to put it through some things. I had to starve it. I had to, you know, it was a different type of way I was moving. A different type of way I think I was disassociating because I was doing all of that and still binge eating. I definitely am realizing that I had a really bad binge eating problem for sure. Mm-hmm. That Walmart, them sugar cookies, $2.98 every Friday. After work, and I could eat the whole thing. in one sitting. Does that really, that's one thing I have realized what grief did do. Like, I did develop a binge eating disorder for sure.
Got it.
Yeah.
So we're going to stop for just a second, and then we are going to come back and we're going to do a part two, because there's just so much to talk about. So I'll see y'all on the other side, folks. Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Shonda the medium. And so when we last left off, she was talking about movement as medicine and what were the hardest things about balancing her needs with the needs of other people. And so that was a great conversation, and it's leading us here to this healing exercise to really get us into listening to our bodies today. So, you know, we like to start by having our feet firmly planted on the ground. And maybe you can press your heels in and lift your toes up as if they're going to kiss the sky or try to touch your calves. So we're getting those toes up as much as possible, and then just bring them down one toe at a time. So maybe pinky toe down to the big toe. So we are firmly planted. Go ahead and let the top lid fold over the bottom lid. Let the shoulders drop. If you are in a chair or in a bed or on the couch, just let yourself fall into that support. So the support of the back of the chair, the wall. If you're laying down on the bed, let yourself sink into the mattress. If you have the pleasure of listening to this in a park, under the stars, or under the sun, let yourself fall into the earth. Letting the shoulders drop. Closing the eyes if that feels safe. Taking a deep breath into your belly. So that means letting your belly extend out. As you exhale, see if you can pull your belly button towards your spine, pushing the air out of your mouth. Again, deep breath in, belly extends. Exhale out, belly retracts. Bringing that belly button into the spine, pushing that air out. And then just go ahead and just do a scan from the top of your head down to your toes. Just checking in. Seeing if there's some tightness. Seeing where there might be tension in the body. Maybe breathing into those places that are a little tight. Maybe giving them a gentle massage. So if you're tight on the shoulders, maybe take your thumb and your forefinger and just give yourself a little massage on the shoulders, the back of the neck. Another deep breath in, exhale out. If there's openness in the body, maybe you have openness in the belly. If you have openness in the belly, see if you can send that openness to the top of your head and to the bottom of your feet. Down your arms, out your fingers, so you are open. Don't forget to breathe. Now would be a good time to ask yourself,
what part of me needs to be heard today? We're listening and we don't judge. What part of me needs to be heard today? Breathe into that space for a moment. And I'm going to count us back from three. Three, see, sense, or imagine a big yellow sun over your head, pulling your energy back from me, from any conversations you had today. Pulling your energy back, and that is just a conscious decision. That is an invitation just to say, I'm pulling my energy back. I'm calling all my energy back to me. Pull that sun down through the top of your head. Fill yourself up with your own energy. Two, move your head from right to left, left to right. Maybe roll your shoulders out. Maybe giving a little clap. Maybe tapping your body. Bringing yourself back in the body. Maybe this is the first time you've been back in your body for a while. So shake, shake, shake. Shake, shake, shake. And one, open your eyes. Okay, thank you. And we are back. All right. Welcome, welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers and Shonda. So Shonda, let's talk a little bit about your medium work again. So you worked with your spiritual teacher who helped you to open up to mediumship. Can you walk us through what mediumship looks like for you? Like, how do you enter into that process?
For sure. For me, it was so organic. It still is. For me, it's very organic. It was in a place where my spiritual teacher who started me off was a family friend. Our mothers have worked together. So it's someone who had kind of always seen from afar, because she was older than I growing up. But our moms were fairly close. And so I was going to her when I was pregnant, and I was like, yo, you're a medium, I'm coming to you. Like, let's go. Mm-hmm. Beforehand, I was seeing another medium just once a year as a way to actually check in with my dad, because he passed when I was in high school. So now my mom has passed, and I realize that she's a medium. So I'm like, if anybody gonna connect me to my mama, like, it's gonna be her, right? And so that actually started with her just kind of planting these seeds. I would get readings and she'd go, oh, you know, your ancestors are encouraging that you really get rid of your dark clothes, and you should really start wearing lighter clothes, and maybe you want to start wearing your hair, keeping your hair wrapped. And I was like, what? Okay, girl. Like, I didn't, I was just like, I was just taking the guidance, right? I was just like, I mean, if that's what they say, throw all the black clothes away, shit, all right? And then she had me doing these meditations to talk to my parents. So she was like, you don't need me to have these hard conversations with them to receive guidance from them. You know, she was like, just take a picture, put a glass of water out, and just talk to them and see what happens. And I just never questioned the process. So I think I was just, all right, let's do it. Everything, I was just like, okay, let's do it. Let's go. And I think I was also very fortunate that she was someone I was very safe with. Like, I trusted her because I knew, like, she knew my parents. It was like family. It was like family helping me, you know? And then at that time, I was still a personal trainer and a choreographer, and I was training a client. And so I'm at home, you know, talking to my parents in the morning, journaling. To me, I'm just doing my thing. Wearing lighter clothes because it's better energy. Like, that's where I'm at in my head. And then I'm training this client, and I hear this voice, like, that's literally like, hi, I'm like, you know, hi, I'm so-and-so's aunt. And I was like, I know you fucking lying. And I was just like, I immediately was like, I'm crazy. I know I ain't hear what I just heard. And it was like, you know, I really need you to shift her workout to look like this, because she's needs to do these exercises because she's actually going through this. And I was just, I remember being,
So you didn't intentionally set out to be a medium for other
people. I wanted to be in Missy Elliott's music video. That was the goal. That was the goal.
Missy, if you ever come across this video, Shonda, are you still available to be in a Missy video. Always
available for Missy Elliott.
Her shoes. Putting that out in the universe.
Listen, I took Missy Elliott's shoes and evacuated with them for Hurricane Katrina, and I did not wear them. Katrina was in 05. I did not wear those shoes until 2010 because I did not want to mess with Missy Elliott's face on the shoes. But I was very proud because when I did wear them, it was to learn how to break dance. That's neither here or there.
Okay. Back to the person who showed up.
Yes. So, was in his personal training session with the client, and this person showed up, and I'm just in the session like, what is happening? And so I was just like, you know what? We cool. Let me just, I was like, hey, do you have this aunt that passed away? And this is someone I've been training for a couple of years now. It's not that personal to where I would know these specific things. And so I was like, I keep hearing this voice telling me that they're your aunt and they're saying this, this, and this. And I know we're working out this, but I think I need to bring you over here by these TRX straps because you got something going on in your chest. And she just stared at me and she was like, I never told you about my aunt. And we talk about a lot, you know, personal training be like therapy too. So she was like, I never told you about my aunt. How do you know that? And I was like, things are happening. I remember that's all I told her. I was just like, things are happening.
Things are happening.
I was like, things are happening. So I called my teacher and I was like, I am hearing, like, people are talking to me. What is happening? And she just laughs. And that's how I knew that she knew what I didn't know. So she was like, yep, you're starting on your path. And I was like, what, Pat? She was like, this is a part of, like, your path and your calling. She was like, this is what you're about to be out here doing. Like, you're about to be getting people, healing them through movement and through their bodies. Like, you're just, it was almost like she was just waiting for me to catch up. Like, she knew it was about to happen. And I so, which is usually the case with us. I was always late to the party. Like, she already knew what was about to happen. And I said, okay, all right, let's see where this goes. And I said, well, I'm going to just start trying to just listen for when I train clients. And I had a client whose uncle came to me and was like, she needs to move some guilt out of her sacral chakra. Can you make sure you just focus on her hips? And I just started telling clients who I trusted, like, hey, I have this gift. I think I want to start doing our sessions a little differently. And this client, we were in the middle of the session and her cycle comes down. And I was like, oh, you know, she was like, yeah, my cycle just came down. And I was like, oh, okay, like, take a moment, whatever you need. Do you need anything? And she was like, no, you don't understand. I'm not supposed to have one. And we both just, like, stared at each other. And she was like, whatever you're doing, it works. And I knew from that moment, I was like, okay, now I need to go, like, study somatics. I need to go deeper into learning about yoga and dance and how this is all connected to the body. What is this spiritually? What did this mean for our ancestors? Like, I was like, okay, I'm sold because now I can help people do more than just lose 10 pounds. I can help people really shed something off of them in a way that's physical, spiritual, and mental. So then it was like, okay, spirit, I'm locked in. Let's go. And so that's kind of like with me, that's basically how I became a medium.
Wow. So fascinating. So quickly, I was in the shower. I was supposed to do a reading with this guy. He was a total non-believer. Kind of brought to me under false pretenses, and I didn't know he was a non-believer, but his grandmother showed up when I was in the shower.
Wow.
And was like, that fool's a fool. You need to do da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hello?
Yeah.
Girl, why are you in my shower? Like, so then I sort of devised a method where I would light a candle. Mm-hmm. And when I lit the candle, they could come in. And then when I blew the candle out,
mm-hmm.
then they could just.
Yes.
So that's kind of how I started to put boundaries around my sessions. So mm-hmm. I'd love to hear sort of, do you go into, so like you, total surprise, like, hey, mm-hmm. Do you, go into a meditation before your client comes? Do you call them in intentionally, or are you just in the flow and then the people show up?
It depends on the person. I noticed that it just depends on how ready the person is. Because sometimes some people come to me frequently, right? So then their ancestors be like my people. So then it's like,
yeah,
I'm fixing breakfast. And they're like, hey, girl. I'm like, y'all, I will see y'all later. And they be like, all right. So, you know, but when I'm in a formal session, I do what's called, we go to your healing room. And so we do a meditation where just to get them in a nice space to open their hearts up to the experience. Yep. And then while they're in that space, I go within myself to open like spiritual gates with my guides. And I ask for only ancestors that are like healing and benevolent. Of course, that's come with like trial and error, things happening to me. And I'd be like, oh, I should put on protection oil next time. Or
really?
It'll be things like I'll feel heavy afterwards. And I'm like, I don't understand what happened. Or I was almost being too in the flow. Like I'll forget to close the gates afterwards. Like, you know, so then I start having trippy dreams. It'll be like just lessons that I would be learning.
Yeah.
And so for me, so now I'm very like, I look at it almost like a movie, like us taking someone on a journey. Right. So then I do a meditation, we set up where we're going, and then I make sure we get us back from where you just went. And so for me, that's been pretty sound. If I'm doing someone heavy, I like to feed my guards. I have like my ancestral guards that look out for me. I have a guard from one of my past lives who's not even an ancestor. He just like my OG, triple OG. And so I like to feed them that I can feel when they're strong, and when they strong, I can flow. I'm very, very, I'm very connected to my team, my spirit family. So when they good, I know I'm good, and we could rock and roll for sure.
Period.
Yeah.
And so what would you say to people? Because I know that people have come to me either for Reiki, mostly when people are coming to me for Reiki, feeling like they're cut off from themselves. Yeah. They feel like they're cut off from spirit. Mm-hmm. What would you want people to know who feel like that?
To know that you're never cut off. Sometimes it's just about, you're not cut off. You just have to actually open, right? So there may be something blocked, right? And blocked doesn't mean cut off. Blocked means there's something that needs to be unplugged. There's something in you that needs to remember that it's safe to have a connection like that again. And so when you're feeling cut off, it doesn't mean you don't have a gift. It doesn't mean that it isn't for you. It doesn't mean not this lifetime. And also remembering that your connection is going to look different than how you see other people connect to spirit too. So really let your connection evolve and develop the way that it needs to. And so if you're someone who's always felt deeply satisfied and at home and safe when you cook, your connection to spirit might be through food. And when you're cooking, and that's how you get your messages, and that's how you heal yourself and heal people, you might be somebody that go on walks. And when you go on walks, you always seeing these birds and these insects, and you've always been, that's your connection to spirit, because spirit is everywhere. And so don't look for your connection to spirit to be like me, or to be like Zoe, or to be like your friend from who been hearing people since she was five. Like, that may not be your journey. And so it's really about the more you get to know yourself, the deeper you fall in love with yourself, that is your connection to spirit. And so however that looks for you, it is a relationship. So you have to let it develop, and you have to let it evolve. So start with what brings you joy, because that is your connection to spirit, and everything else will flow from there.
Yeah, definitely. And it makes me think about, one of the things that I'll say to people is like, ask for messages on the radio. ask for messages in a conversation, because they're going to speak to you in ways that are familiar to you. So
yeah, exactly. You're not crazy.
That really resonates. Yeah. But you can feel crazy, right? Like, you know, when I'm driving, not so much now. Now I'll be like asking for my parking angels. But, you know, if I'm driving and all of a sudden I'm hearing turn left, turn right, like I'm looking for parking. And I used to just get these messages. The spirit would just be like, stop driving, just stop and wait. So I would just stop and wait. And then somebody would pull out of a parking space. So then I started putting two and two together. I was like, oh, okay, I got some parking juju. Okay, like, I love that.
Exactly.
Especially living in New York City, like, give me all the parking juju. Give it to me.
That's how I feel at Walmart.
You what?
That's how I feel at Walmart. Like, give me a good spot. I don't want to walk today.
I don't want to walk today. So what's, I feel like we've already talked about this one small way. I feel like we just talked about that. One small way they can begin to connect with their ancestors. Because that's the other thing, right? People have a funny idea about working with their ancestors. Where do you think that fear comes from?
I think the fear comes from what we've been told and what we've been sold. Because I think people forget that your grandmother that you miss so much is your ancestor. And I think we forget that anyone who has passed on is our ancestor. No matter the, you know, the age, if they're on the other side, they're in the spirit realm, they are our ancestor. And so it's to remember that your ancestors aren't this, they are, yes, people who you may not know, generations of your lineage, but they are also your grandmother and your aunt who you miss dearly. And so when we connect to our ancestors, we connect to a part of our DNA, a part of our bodies, a part of ourselves. And it's not a scary thing. It can be something very beautiful if you allow for your heart to make it that and let it be that. We underestimate, and because of what we've seen, our ancestors know us. All right? And so it's like, it's very, you ain't got to do the most. People be like, well, I don't have an altar. I don't, your body is your first altar. Honor them by taking care of yourself. And you can talk to them when you're in the car. Just the way you would talk to whatever your divine is, if it's God, spirit, however that looks like for you. Your ancestors are the direct connection to that source, to that God and to that spirit, however you connect to something that you believe in, right, that's bigger than you. And so the way we communicate with them is the same. We honor them by maybe having their picture up and giving them a glass of cold water because the elements of the earth allows for us to connect to them. We give them their favorite candy that they loved when they was here, you know, on earth, because we appreciate them, because they don't have to show up for us. They don't owe us nothing. But they are connected to this source of unconditional love. And so the fact that they send us our favorite song on the radio when we're crying, or they send us that symbol that only us and them know from that one time when we were six, you know, that's love, that they show up for us. And that's just the beginning, you know, of being able to really be connected to and with them. So if you're someone who's interested in just starting that, I will always say, there's this book called Signs and Synchronicities that I love. And I think it does a beautiful way of, showing people how you can stay connected to your loved ones on the other side without feeling like you gotta go change your whole life around. And it's really about speaking to them going, you know, I'm like that nerd that loves geography. So in my mind, it's like a map. So I'm like, okay, when it's my mama's people, y'all send me an orange butterfly. Daddy, when it's just my daddy, I need like a Temptation song, Motown sound. Like, you can have all these ways, and you just say it in prayer, just in conversation, telling them how you want them to show up for you, and just let them start to show you that they're there. And you can have the, like, that's a beautiful way to start. And if you want to have them, or invite them into your space, you can have their pictures
with a glass of water and they favorite little snacky snacks. Or when it's their birthday, put a little slice of cake. Or when it's Thanksgiving, make them a little plate. You know, and it's really about honoring, and it's really about energy. You giving them that love and that energy and allowing for them to show up for you without needing anything, but it's really just to honor. And you can receive that love. You be feeling so loved when you get your signs and your synchronicities. You be like, how y'all knew? I love y'all so much. And then I really love it, because then you don't look for all these other people out here on earth surviving with you to fill this void of like family and being seen and being unconditionally loved.
Yeah, and this goes for people too who may not know their biological families, or yes, they are disconnected from their families, because there's lots of people also who have right, very complicated relationships with their families, and they yes, they don't want to yes, do that ancestor work. Right. And so you can right, do that work also by asking for your most enlightened ancestors. You can yes, do it by connecting to historical figures that you
identify,
have yeah, been touched by. What else would you think about for people who are in that situation?
I immediately thought of like people, if you have teachers that have inspired you, that have passed on, right? Like teachers through school who've always believed in you, that have passed on, they are ancestors. It doesn't always have to be people in your DNA and bloodline. Because like you said again, yes, that connection isn't there. Sometimes you don't want to be bothered, and that is okay. Don't carry any guilt around that. When you start doing that kind of work, whenever it's time for you to do healing around any of those relationships, it'll happen organically. But you want to start with ancestors, with spirits who are enlightened, who can help you along your path, keep you in alignment with your highest good, not people who you got to go like work some shit out with. It depends on where you at, you know. But yeah, like that's you right, said, historical figures that passed away. I know people who, you know, they connect to Harriet Tubman for courage, you know, and they like, yeah, they honor her and they give her, you know, an offering and they ask for her wisdom and her help, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really about honoring those who've come before us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. I have a Harriet Tubman conjure book around here. I'm going to take it out. That's reminding me. I need to take it out and make a little altar for her. So last
yeah, I have one for Marie Laveau. Yeah.
Oh, nice. You have mm-hmm, an altar for her?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Do we want to say just like quick or simply what we might want to put on an altar for people, or do we think they should check with their spiritual?
I would say check with your spiritual, but when in doubt, keep the space clean. I feel like that's like no matter yeah, where, however you roll, however you rock, please out. Like,
I agree.
Think of it as a guest room. And you got somebody coming over. That. You know, you I want like it to that, be clean. You want it to smell nice. You want your guests to come over and be like, "Ooh, child, is this a 5-star hotel? Like, let's go." Mm-hmm. So whenever you're being intentional about that, remember what it's for. And remember and really be intentional about that. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it does need to be from your heart. Like, don't throw nothing together.
Period.
Dignity of simplicity.
So, oof, I love that. Dignity of simplicity. So last question. What's one thing you're grieving and what's one thing you're grateful for?
I think for me, whenever I think grieving and I think grateful, I always think of duality. I think for me, grieving relationships that I've had to let go, or relationships that I've even, you know, through my own wounds, forced out on my healing journey. Missing those connections, but also understanding that if they were still meant to be, they would be. And being grateful for the room and the space that those relationships have made for the relationships I have now. And so I love okay, to always think of it that you know, our, the people we're surrounded by, our lives reflect back to us, right? What's going on down on the inside of us. And to be grieving the relationships that I've lost, those have been people I've known since I was born, you know, and now I'm like in my mid-30s and those relationships are no longer. But to also look up and be surrounded by relationships and people who are doing the work, people who are beautiful, people who see me, who know I'm not perfect, and who show up for me and love me and lovingly hold me accountable. It's like, for the first time, I feel like I can feel the love that people are now trying to give me and send back to me. And I'm so grateful. And I don't know if I would be able to feel it in my heart the way that I do now if it wouldn't have been from losing those other relationships and having to grieve those.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And how can people find you? How can people support your work?
So I got a YouTube channel. It's Domango, D-O-M-A-N-G-O, and the word training, like personal training. And so my YouTube channel, Domango Training, I'm always doing channel messages. I have some movement videos up there, some guided meditations. And then my website is the same thing, domangotraining.com. So on there, you'll find my herbs, courses, classes. You can book a reading, all the things. And all the links to my social media are also on there, too. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Shonda. This has been so, so good. I'm just so glad we met. And I'm just excited for whatever is going to come out of this meeting. And so, y'all, I'm going to start giving y'all homework. So, we have some journal prompts here. And so this is just, you know, homework, growth work, whatever you want to call it, just to think about our conversation or today or any of the conversations that we've had previous, and just journal about what your body is remembering right now. What is your body remembering? And when is the last time you gave yourself permission to grieve and move at the same time? I was talking with someone who's going to be a future guest yesterday, and we were just talking about what is grief anyway. And one of the things that came up for me was it's an awareness. It's a reminder of our humanity. It's a reminder that we are alive. And so when was the last time you gave yourself permission to be alive, to grieve, to move, to be in this human experience? So that's your growth work. You can DM me on Instagram at I am Zoe Flowers, your answers. You can send me an email at info@IamZoeFlowers.com. Or you can contact me through my website, which is also IamZoeFlowers.com. And I might feature your story, your answers, on an upcoming episode. So yeah, get to journaling. Okay, so on our next episode, we're going to be talking about what does it mean to lead while still healing. I'm going to be talking with the co-founder and executive director of Cielo. It's an organization that I've been working with for a while. And they are a fierce advocate for Indigenous migrants. And she is a woman who's been carrying generations of wisdom and pain all at the same time. And so we're going to talk about what it means to hold a community in one hand and your own old wounds in the other. How do you keep showing up for others while tending to the parts of yourself that are still healing? And what does intergenerational leadership look like when you're still grieving what you haven't received? So this is an episode for anybody who's ever led while still feeling broken. We are not broken, but we may feel broken sometimes. This is for people who've organized while grieving or mothered a movement while trying to mother themselves and their own children. So tune in this Tuesday, 7:11 Eastern Standard Time. I will meet you on the brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I'll talk with you soon.